cost number 1319096CV, Texas Municipal League Intergovernmental Risk Pool versus City of Hidalgo. Well, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, and may it please the court.
Good morning, and in the interest of time, let's assume that you all are properly before us, so please don't bother to spend any time on that part of the argument. We'll rely on the briefs.
Thank you very much. It's my privilege to represent what I'm going to refer to as the risk pool, which is a governmental entity. It's comprised of 2,800 plus Texas political subdivisions who are a group who have agreed jointly to self-insure various risks that they have under common rules and procedures. In this instance, the City of Hidalgo is a member of the risk pool. They suffered a loss. The risk pool adjusted the loss and paid roughly, adjusted the claim and paid several hundred thousand dollars and found the amount of the loss to be about $500,000. And under the risk pool rules and procedures, the relevant contracts call for a proof of loss to be submitted by the member within 60 days of the loss. And if there's a dispute about the amount of the loss between the risk pool and the member, within the next 60 days or 120 days later, the member has a right to request an appraisal. That didn't happen here.
Now, if they had, I know you're disputing that it was done so timely. Had they done so timely, would there be jurisdiction then for this appraisal process?
Had they done so timely, the risk pool would have complied with the appraisal procedure. And in other instances, the risk pool has participated in appraisals that have been timely requested.
Okay.
With regard to this issue, what's interesting about, from my standpoint, from the risk pool standpoint, what's interesting here is we're all grappling with to what extent can a court, prior to a trial on the merits, prior to an adjudication within the meaning of Chapter 271, order a governmental entity to comply with a contractual provision that's disputed. That's what we think we're here about. And for the risk pool, the starting point is that the risk pool as a governmental entity has governmental immunity from suit unless there's an express statutory waiver of immunity. We view Chapter 271 almost like a funnel. 271-152, which has the general waiver of immunity provision, is at the top, and it makes clear that the waiver of immunity for a governmental entity that enters into a covered contract is subject to the terms and conditions of the Act. It's not a blanket waiver of immunity for all purposes. Then the funnel comes down to 271-153, which has other limitations on what it defines to be adjudication awards. Under the statute, an adjudication award is what happens after there's been a trial on the merits. And even after there's been a trial on the merits, the legislature has put additional restrictions on the scope of the waiver of immunity. Then we come down to various other provisions, including one at issue here, 271.154, dealing with adjudication procedures, where the funnel narrows again. And the funnel requires, or allows, I should say, the enforcement of adjudication procedures according to the terms and conditions of a government entity's agreement. So that is the conceptual framework that we believe, the risk pool believes, we're operating under. And our position,
of course, in the City of Abilene case, the court determined that the exact same process that you all are, the case is exactly on point, obviously. It is an adjudication procedure. Our appraisal process is an adjudication procedure. So we would have to, once again, disagree with the City of Abilene in order to adopt your position. So why is the City of Abilene wrong?
The City of Abilene is wrong for all the reasons that this court's decision in Mission Consolidated is right. And I want to, with respect, note,
But that case is a little different, I think, in terms of the provision that was required in that contract, which said if you don't comply with this, then it's just your claim's dismissed. You know, we don't even accept the claim to begin with. So I see it's a little different.
They're absolutely different factually, but the legal concepts are the same, which is there were conditions precedent to the contractual rights that the plaintiff was trying to assert. In our case, while no one is disputing that there's a 271-152 waiver for the city's claim to recover damages ultimately, nobody's disputing that. Texas Supreme Court authority, however, is that you look at every claim for relief that is asserted to determine whether or not the trial court has jurisdiction over that claim. Happens commonly where there are multiple claims. The easier example would be in a Tort Claims Act case where there might be an allegation of fraud or some other intentional tort that clearly the court lacks jurisdiction over. It doesn't deprive the court of jurisdiction over claims that may fall within the waiver of immunity in the Tort Claims Act, but it does deprive the court of jurisdiction over claims for which no waiver of immunity exists. Here, the issue before the court is, does the trial court have jurisdiction prior to a trial on interlocutory basis to order compliance with a disputed contract provision? Our position is it does not. And what's analogous between our case we submit and Mission Consolidated is when you focus on the contract right at issue, which is the claim to a contract right to appraisal, has the city of Hidalgo satisfied the conditions precedent to invoke that right? And when it has not, we submit, in the same way that in Mission Consolidated, when the plaintiff had not complied with the requisites to enter the courthouse, there's no waiver of immunity. And so that's the analogy we see. I absolutely agree with Your Honor that in Mission Consolidated, the doors to the courthouse were closed. Here we're not dealing with a claim that the doors to the courthouse are completely closed to the city. But with respect to the issue we're disputing, the doors to the courthouse are not open to compel compliance pre-trial with an appraisal remedy that's disputed when the city indisputably did not comply with the contractual requirements to invoke that procedure. They didn't comply because they never filed a proof of loss. They didn't comply because they waited 2 years to seek appraisal. And they didn't comply because when they purported to invoke the right, they didn't name a disinterested appraiser. So in our mind, that's analogous to Mission Consolidated, where the plaintiff in Mission Consolidated did not comply with the contractual prerequisites for entering the court. Here, the city of Hidalgo did not comply with the contractual prerequisites for invoking the appraisal right. And as the court has determined in Mission, 271.154 is at the bottom of the funnel. It's an additional limitation on the waiver of immunity. So when we focus on the right at issue here, there's no waiver of immunity for a trial court to compel before a trial on the merits an interlocutory order to comply with a contract provision. That's conceptually what this dispute is about.
So you want us to basically concern ourselves with the ultimate merits of the city's motion to compel an appraisal. You want it? You do not. Okay.
No. And we appreciate and we accept that the underlying merits as merits are not before this panel. Okay. However. When the court is performing its jurisdictional analysis to determine whether or not the plaintiff has effectively asserted a waiver of immunity, there is necessarily an examination about whether they've satisfied the prerequisites. And again, to take us outside of what may be to some a statutory framework that's confusing, let's talk just briefly by analogy to Tort Claims Act case. Plaintiff comes in, says Tort Claims Act waiver of immunity. They cite a statute that provides for waiver immunity. They allege that the waiver of immunity is the use of motor-driven equipment. And the defendant governmental entity, like the city, comes in and proves conclusively on its jurisdictional plea. No motor-driven equipment played any part, top side or bottom, in the injury. In that context, the court looks at that underlying factual predicate, which is a disputed jurisdictional fact in resolving whether or not the waiver of immunity alleged exists. Here, in the same way, when the court examines whether there's been a waiver of immunity to permit the enforcement, compel an order compelling the enforcement of a contract right prior to trial, the court can and should look at the factual record that's been put before you. And in here, the factual record's undisputed with respect to the absence of a proof of loss.
Well, they have put forth some arguments in their brief regarding that. They say that the risk pool actually provided some pre-filled form initially, and also that the 60 days is not really properly defined in the... So they have given some arguments. You say disputed, but it is disputed.
They're not factual disputes. There's no factual dispute that the city never submitted a signed sworn proof of loss. There's no dispute that the risk pool offered them one for around $500,000, a little under $500,000 total.
Okay.
The issue here is we have a member that's seeking $7.3 million, and there's no dispute the city never had submitted to the risk pool through today a proof of loss alleging that its damages were in the range of $7.3 million instead of $500,000. And a dimension that's important for the court to recall here is the nature of the risk pool. They are stewards for public money. And so this is not a private insurance company. It's not a for-profit enterprise. The reason the members join the risk pool is because they perceive benefits from self-insuring their risks. They put their government money in the same pot, but they expect the risk pool to hold all of the members to the same rules and procedures, one of which is a public official needs to sign a sworn proof of loss verifying the claimed loss as a condition for ultimate payment. Here we have a very dramatic discrepancy that goes to the merits. They're not before you, but I want to just add some color for why these rules and procedures matter in this context. And sometimes courts mistakenly equate the risk pool with a private insurance company. It's not. It's a governmental entity that has to be concerned about the public funds that it is administering for the other 2,799 governmental members besides the city of Hidalgo. We believe that the analysis the court embraced in Mission Consolidated applies here, albeit under a different factual context, when the court focuses on the contract, disputed contract right at issue. And here, like in Mission, the city, who claims that this is an adjudication procedure, did not satisfy the prerequisites for invoking that procedure. It has to show that it complied.
So that would be one way to distinguish City of Abilene then, because in City of Abilene, the court determined it was an adjudication procedure, but they did comply with the...
Well, Abilene can't, with due respect, is wrong because for the reasons your decision in Mission Consolidated is right, which right. is that court found that 271-154 created a waiver of immunity. That court right. viewed it as a waiver creating statute rather than a immunity waiver limiting statute. That decision, by the way, was on review to the Supreme Court.
I was going to ask that question.
There was a petition review submitted. The Supreme Court called for a response to the petition for review, and it is at that point in time that the City of Abilene settled. Mm. So we don't have a decision from the Supreme Court. We don't have any ruling on that, but if the court were to examine the website for the procedural history, you will notice that that case was resolved after the Supreme Court called for a response to the risk pool's petition for review. So that case is out there. We believe it is wrong for the reasons that your decision in Mission Consolidated is right. We never thought it was consistent with Zachary for the reasons that your decision in Mission Consolidated, we believe, correctly analyzed Zachary as indicating that all these subsidiary statutory provisions in 271 are further limitations on the waiver of immunity. They're not waiver creating provisions. And with that, unless you have additional questions, I'll reserve my time for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Court.
Good morning, y'all. May it please the court. To respond briefly, Mission Consolidated is a completely different case than the City of Abilene case. You had a separate independent contract between a contractor and a school district. In it, they had to make an administrative complaint within 90 days. They didn't do that, failed. Here, we're talking about, they don't use the word insurance contract, you know, it's, you know, for some reason, even though it is a breach of contract, there is a general consensus that immunity is waived in that insurance agreement between the risk pool and the government entity. That's the whole point of it. The City of Abilene case, it could not be.
When you say a general consensus, what do you mean by that?
If you look at the City of Abilene case, it says that in the part it says, there's no dispute among the parties that the act generally waives the risk pool's government immunity for the city's cause of action for breach of the insurance contract. So it's totally different from Mission when you have a contract that's outside of this insurance arena that you're looking at. Some of the things that they on the proof of loss, for example. Okay, I've spent my life looking at insurance policies, and in Texas right now, we have a lot of different insurance policies. I'm sure the court's aware. If you look at the proof of loss provision it's on page 571 of the record. Under D, it says it has to be done or submitted within 60 days. It doesn't give a deadline. Here, what happened, when there is no dispute, is that when the initial payment came to the City of Hidalgo for the State Farm Arena, they completed the proof of loss for them. They never sent them a blank proof of loss. They never asked them to do that. They sent payment with it and then filled it out for them. I mean, I've never seen that before. But obviously, they were able to evaluate the claim, do what they needed to do, and of course wanted the city to sign off on it, which they did not. So, and you look at appraisal.
Was it an incumbent upon the city at that point then to dispute it and
they did dispute
this
it.
Appraisal?
I don't think it was incumbent on them at that time, because if you look at appraisal, if you look at the definition, it says 60 days after receipt of the proof of loss by the fund.
Right.
The city never sent in a proof of loss. They got one filled out. They never got a blank proof of loss.
If the member and the fund failed to agree to the amount of loss, each shall, upon the written demand made within 60 days after receipt of proof of loss by the fund.
It never
appraiser.
Happened.
Okay, selected the appraiser.
And as we all know, an appraisal in Texas has taken a new meaning in the last 5 years. You know, if this was a residential case, I'm sure we'd be on the opposite side. It's a commercial case. And in commercial cases, the risk pool, just like any other insuring entity, wants to prevent that from happening.
So in the City of Abilene, though, the court did note that the proof of loss was done within 60 days of the event itself, which is a wind and hailstorm. And the court described that as a timely, filing it timely. So isn't that suggesting then that the 60 days runs from the date of the loss?
I don't know that insuring agreement that between them.
Oh,
it was a different
same.
Year.
No, it's the exact same provision.
Well, no, but I thought it was 2014 right. Policy.
Oh, I see.
Wow. So this is
the
a 2016
exactly
policy. Well, I'm just taking the language, and I know it's construed against the risk pool. It doesn't say that. And, you know, when you talk about condition precedence, and it doesn't say that to appraisal. But if you look at the proof of loss, 60 days from when? It doesn't say. So I'm sure that will be probably fixed or changed here in the future. But appraisal is it specific performance? Is it an equitable remedy? And as the
so
city,
how is forcing them to participate in this process that they dispute, how is that not specific performance? I realize City of Abilene said it's not. I realize that, but let's put City of Abilene aside.
Because it doesn't determine the coverage under the policy, okay? It's kind of interesting. It's a provision that either side, it doesn't say only they can invoke. Either side can invoke. And the purpose of that, as the Texas Supreme Court has said, is to streamline the process as to the amount of damage. It doesn't mean that there's coverage. It doesn't mean that they don't have defenses to the coverage in the lawsuit itself. But it streamlines the damages. And so the specific performance is they're going to appraisal. It's not equitable. It's in the policy. Either side, it's interesting that the risk pool, it acts like they're being forced. They have a policy provision. It says either of them can invoke it. We're just having them do what they would do if the facts were different and the city, State Farm Arena didn't have the amount of damage it did. You know, and they would invoke it so they could go down and get the damages. And then, but here, all it's doing is establishing the value of the damages under the terms that the risk pool created. It's fair. Their argument against it, I'm not really sure. They can say that they can attack the appraisal process and say the damages that were awarded were wrong. All of that can still be brought up in the case. The condition precedent, if we didn't meet it, I'm sure that's going to be, that could be, if there's a proof of loss, and let's say somehow it's 60 days from the whenever. That's a question that the jury can answer. So they're not losing anything. They have all of their rights. We're just asking them to, we're just invoking a policy provision that they could have invoked themselves.
If you said the jury can decide that, but if you're invoking the appraisal for the contract, aren't you also looking at a dispositive result from that?
That's a difficult question to answer with the current state of appraisal in the residential area.
No, but doesn't the provision call for an umpire and then a decision?
It does. It does, but it's my understanding in other cases that they can still dispute that. I mean, the jury doesn't have to accept it. They can say that the appraiser or the umpire made a mistake.
Then what does it matter because you already have an appraisal?
Excuse me, sir?
What does it matter then because you already have an appraisal to go to the jury with?
It matters because there may be coverage defenses to it. It speeds the process up, obviously. But it doesn't prevent the jury from determining the damages themselves. It's a provision that's in there that allows us to go do it. We get to get up and say, hey, we had an umpire, a non-biased person, maybe appointed by the court if we couldn't agree, who determined these damages. The risk pool can fight that. They don't have to accept it, and they can go against it. You know, in the residential area of appraisal, as I'm sure this court's aware. You know, the Texas Supreme Court hasn't really, if the insurance company pays the appraisal, the issue is there anything left after that? We're never here. This is the first time I'm on commercial cases. It's a different, I'm on the other side. And so, but they have every right to do it. Also, they could pay it. And if they did decide to pay it, the question is, what would we be entitled to? Which would only be attorney's fees, I'm sure that would not be agreed to. So it effectively allows them also to put their case forward, and they can make a decision. So it really is a wonderful process, but it's not a condition preceding. The way they're describing it is like they're being forced into it. It's their policy.
The risk pool is claims if you didn't file the proof of loss within 60 days, but isn't it also true then if you're saying, well, they did it for us, then when they did it for you and you disagreed, well, didn't you also fail to request an appraisal within 60 days?
My response would be that...
That's a two conditions.
Correct, but that doesn't stop the appraisal from going forward. So the those are defenses that they can use, but what our response is, and it has to be taken as true in our motion, is your 60 days from the proof of loss, it doesn't say the date it's from. We're also saying that you didn't give us a proof of loss, and... Whether a proof of loss is a condition precedent to coverage in a lawsuit is a dispute. The insurance company, or the risk pool, I'm sure would say it is. It's the notice. But here, they have notice. And they didn't need the proof of loss in order to pay the first part of the damages. In fact, they sent the proof of loss with the only payment that they've made.
I have a question on the Santa Rosa case, because you seem to rely on it. In your brief, for the proposition that compliance with the contract's adjudication procedures has no bearing on the waiver of immunity question. And I guess, you know, haven't we departed, this court departed from it in our mission case where Santa Rosa is really not the law, at least as we see it now?
Your Honor, I don't remember that specific part on Santa Rosa. On mission, I made a list, and I was going down eight facts just right from the beginning. And that is a separate contract entered into between the general contractor and the school district. They wrote a provision in it. They didn't meet that provision. That's completely different than the insurance, I'm going to say contract, that exists here. It's totally
except
different.
Except that we did state in the city of Mission that, and don't worry about your time running out, because we're asking questions, that the 154 was not a waiver of immunity. And so if we were to adopt your position here today and agree with the city of Abilene, wouldn't that be inconsistent with the ERO case?
I say no. And the reason is that in the Mission case, you had a contract negotiated between the parties. They didn't meet the contract. They're out. Here, the appraisal is not something that kicks the parties out of coverage. It's not a, in my mind, it is adjudication of damages. But it doesn't mean you can't bring it up later time in the trial. And so the difference is that in the city of Mission, I think what y'all said is you all had a contract. You had 90 days. You didn't do it. Very clean and very easy. So if in here, appraisal is for both parties to invoke. Both parties can use the result throughout the claim and the lawsuit. But it's not preventive. It's not like it's not adjudication of the case. It's not over. The parties can still dispute it. I mean, I've had cases where we didn't like what the umpire decided. And we would go back to, and we fought with the jury and said that umpire was wrong. You know, you can go into the bias of the umpire. Maybe the umpire missed damages that they should have looked at. And so it's not an adjudication. There's nothing that's final. But it does help. Obviously, the provision's very helpful.
Let's speed the process along, huh?
Thank you.
Any further questions?
Thank you. Thank you all very much.
Thank you. I'll be very brief. There are reasons why the risk pool wants its members to follow the rules. And while this is not part of your record, there is a case called the Alice Housing Authority case where analogous events happened substantially after the loss. After the loss had been adjusted, a very large claim was asserted. The risk pool thought the claim was untimely asserted and the appraisal invocation was untimely asserted. Less than impartial umpire was appointed ex parte by a trial judge. An ex parte appraisal occurred, resulting in a multi-million dollar ex parte appraisal award. And the risk pool for several years wrangled over these untimely assertions of multi-million dollar claims well after the fact, and appraisals that didn't yield what it deemed to be a fair result. Here, they're simply asking the court to look at the jurisdictional issue, as you did in Mission, and determine whether or not the city did comply with the conditions precedent, because if not, it has not complied with the requisites to work through the narrow waiver of immunity in 271 and the 271.154 further restriction on waiver of immunity holds. I'm kind of intrigued by the notion that the proof of loss provision in this agreement is ambiguous. If you actually go back to page 571 of the record, you'll see there's a section in the property coverage document called In Case of Loss. And then subchapter A is Notice of Loss. Subchapter D is Proof of Loss. You know how maybe you've all seen these pictures where you look at it one way and you see a vase and you look at it another way and you see two faces staring at each other? There's been an emphasis by the city to treat proof of loss as a generic term. It's proof of loss. And so when the contract says there needs to be proof of loss within 60 days, there should be no ambiguity in your mind about 60 days of what? The loss that's referenced in the title, the loss that's referenced in the chapter heading in the case of loss. There's a clear notice of loss requirement, and it's incumbent on the member. The fact that the risk pool provides its member with a proposed proof of loss is a service. When you read this contract, it is incumbent on the member to provide the risk pool with a proof of loss. Your record is unambiguous. The member never supplied any proof of loss. That is a condition precedent.
Well, but by the fact that you all are providing it or the risk pool is providing it, now, do you expect them to just hand it back to you? I mean, or doesn't that sort of lull them into a false sense of security, thinking, oh, it's already been done, I don't have to do it?
Two comments. First of all, they're sophisticated parties to a contract where the member has the duty to turn it back. This is not a case where the member returned the proof of loss proposed by the risk pool. It was incumbent on them, if they did not agree with that proof of loss, to submit one. They never did. This is not a fight about whether or not the member was entitled to the amount of loss that the risk pool originally deemed it was entitled to and paid. We're talking here about a dispute over the roughly $6.5 million discrepancy 2 years later between the amount of loss claimed and not reported, not submitted. No public official put their name on a sworn document indicating that that was the amount in controversy. Had they done so, we'd have been 2 years earlier in this process. So there are reasons for these temporal periods. And I really just wanted to focus on the loss trigger because it's not ambiguous. The contract's very clear. It's not ambiguous. And it's undisputed. That threshold predicate was never satisfied. And for the limited purposes of jurisdiction, it's undisputed that the city did not comply with the prerequisites for invoking an appraisal, which we believe brings this case within the scope of your mission consolidated decision. If there are no other questions, I thank you for your courtesies.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
The case will be under submission.